Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 131.
This week on the podcast, as far as elections go, we're not going to say everything is hopeless, but we are going to say that you need to do better next time, America. We've blogged about how.
And voters everywhere voted both for and against everything they stand for. Hey voters, you don't get to have two opinions on the same issue.
The lame duck session is shaping up to look more like a healthy and virile duck session.
And SCOTUS invites a serious case of deja vu with new high-profile cases that sound suspiciously like the old ones.
We now have 3,000 troops in Iraq, but don't worry, they aren't on the ground. They're just soldiers deployed to a war-torn region who have no particular mandate or agenda. Nothing to see here.
And goodbye, Michelle Bachmann and Steve Stockman. Hello, Glenn Grothman, who will carry on your tradition of rhyming last names and insane agendas.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Do that, because we've got a blog up that's very important that you read that we wrote this week.
Gonna change your life, and then...
And America's.
And America's lives. So, basically, Election Day was this week, as you may or may not know. If right. You don't know, pull your shit together.
Come on.
If you didn't know that, you don't know much.
You fucked up.
Yeah. If you did know and you voted but didn't encourage anyone in your vicinity to vote...
You only got half of it right.
Right. You only got 50%. This article is going to give you a step-by-step sort of tutorial on how to be an engaged, responsible citizen.
Right.
It's easy. It's super easy.
Right.
It's...
Because there weren't enough of them in this election.
No.
For various reasons.
For a variety of reasons that most likely, if you're our listener, were not, like, restrictive voter ID laws in your state.
Right.
If you aren't our listener... Welcome. But also, right. There's a chance that you were facing some terribly restrictive voting, you know, situations.
Yeah.
If you were just like a person who went to the polls and did not like make sure that your coworkers voted, make sure that your friends voted, and make sure that your mom and dad voted, even if they weren't going to vote for the same people as you,
right.
You didn't do your job.
Correct.
And so that's... We're about to bring you some terrible news.
There's
a whole podcast of terrible news.
The worst. Well, and the reason that we wrote this was came out of your own need to write this.
To do something.
Right.
I just, like, I hate when Election Day happens, and I always feel like I have several victories on Election Day where someone who wasn't going to vote votes because of me.
Yeah.
And that is what happens anytime you are a person who makes sure that your friends
vote. Right,
and
you feel great about it.
And you feel great about it.
Whenever you educate your friends, I mean, we had people registering for Obamacare within the last year. We felt great about that. It makes you feel good.
It makes you feel awesome.
Yeah.
And
you know why? Because it's making people do that. It's imposing your will on people, and that's always fun.
That's always great. But also, the thing is that the more people that you know that vote, the more likely the people that you know will become engaged,
right.
You know, and the more likely that they will become knowledgeable voters, ultimately,
well, right.
Which is what the goal is here.
And the more, you know, and like we said, even if they're not going to vote the same as you, the more educated a Republican voter is, I would say probably the less they vote Republican. But
right.
they're certainly not going to be voting for, like, the idiots that run their party currently.
Exactly.
So
no,
it's better to have smart Republican voters than it is to have
dumb. That's something
dumb
that we hear a lot where people are like, well, I wouldn't want to encourage my mom to vote. She doesn't, she votes, she's a Republican.
Yeah.
And
well,
it's like,
encourage her to read the news before she votes.
Right. But I mean, when you encourage her to vote, that's a good time to have a conversation about why you're voting the way that you're voting. Just don't buy into the idea that it's rude to talk about politics and that it's rude to care about the things that affect your life and to make other people around you aware that their actions affect your life directly.
Right.
That's what I think ultimately, you know, I had a friend at work who literally voted because I convinced her that one proposition on the California ballot out of six
right.
was important to vote on.
Right. And it was
the one that didn't pass.
It was the one that made the most sense that didn't pass.
Exactly. Yeah. No, we're talking about the proposition that was going to require insurance companies to get approval before raising their rates on the exchanges. It was, I think, a good idea. And it didn't pass, but it was that was the whole reason that one of my friends went to the polls.
Right.
She literally was like, it's not worth voting. And I was like, it is worth voting. Let me explain why. I use that one tiny example because that's a proposition. Like, who even knows what the propositions
right.
are most of the time? And she went to the polls. So, like, it's, you just sort of have to create one sort of like moment to have this conversation with someone it's important.
And I would contend on that particular prop in the state of California that the reason that it didn't pass is for the very reason that we're talking about right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because what generally happens in propositions is that when someone is not educated enough about the proposition, they still go to vote because they're like, oh, I want to vote for Jerry Brown. But
right.
then they get in there and they're like, well, there's six propositions and I don't know what the hell to vote on those You know what happens?
They just vote no.
They vote no. And so, and that's what happened on that, because there's no way, if you knew exactly what that was,
right, that
you
would think it
was
a bad idea.
Like, oh yes, I really want them to just be able to raise my healthcare costs.
I love it when health insurance companies jack up my rates.
Right, but people didn't know, because people, you know. Because
they don't, they weren't.
They didn't know.
No, and that's why, I mean, that's why I have issues with the proposition system in the first place, is because it's impossible. We're not legislators. We don't have a staff to educate us.
But if you read our blog, you would not have been faced with having to vote no on something for not knowing about it.
Exactly.
Because if you would have followed the steps laid out in our blog, then you would have known.
You would have known. Exactly.
Right.
And so with that, we bring you news of how the Republicans took over the Senate.
Right, exactly. We bring you news of people all over the country that didn't know.
Yeah. And these are people in states that passed some very progressive propositions that we're going to talk about a little later. So people were not necessarily voting consistently in these elections.
Right.
It's a little bit curious how some of these choices were made.
Yeah.
Especially in the governor's races, too. I mean forget the Senate. The governor's races were a total shit show.
Yeah,
big time. But the Republicans have so far gained 7 seats. They look like they're going to gain 9. There's a couple that are still up in the air.
Yeah.
One of them is a runoff, and one of them is still undecided.
our favorite state this election cycle.
This is one of the most heavily Republican House and Senate situations that we've had in a long time in this country. So this is a fucking mess, guys.
Since the 20s.
When
she says a long time, she doesn't mean like a couple, like the 70s.
Yeah. So basically, like,
we're talking about pre-Depression era.
Exactly.
Like, that's not good.
That's not what you want. No. We have 44 Democrats and 2 independents who caucus with us in the Senate. The Republicans currently have 52. They're going to have 54 by the end of whenever this recount situation happens in Alaska. Or not recount.
It's not even a recount. Well, we've been talking the last couple of weeks about the hilarious fact that, like, no one could poll their own citizens in Alaska. Like,
Alaska doesn't know what's going on in its own state.
Mark Begich was either ahead by 10% or whoever he was
behind
running
by 7%.
Right, exactly. You couldn't know. So now, they still haven't declared a winner there yet, because they've, just between like Wednesday and Friday, they've announced that there's like 40,000 votes still yet to be counted. And Begich is only down by like 8,000.
Yeah.
He's down by like 3% or something like that. He would have to sort of reverse the trends of what, because I mean, you know, 3% is a decent amount.
Dan Sullivan
has been
consistently enough in the lead that it looks like he's probably going to win.
No one really thinks that Begich is going to win, but neither of them have declared, neither of them have conceded, and they won't
in
probably
true Alaska style.
Right, exactly.
Everyone's just didn't know how to put their arms up in the air and doesn't know what to do.
They didn't know how to poll the people. They didn't know how to count the votes. They've got some real problems up there. Yeah.
Also, I just said that they put their arms... that putting their arms up sounds like they're dancing.
Well, hey.
Their hands up in the air. Uh-huh. That sounds like a...
They're waving them like they just don't care.
Exactly.
That's exactly what they're doing.
That's what they're doing in Alaska. That's what they've been doing this whole time.
Right.
Where we did 100% definitely lose seats. Or
a lot of places.
It was a lot of places. In Arkansas, we lost Mark Pryor. Tom Cotton is a person now who's going to be in the Senate. Cory Gardner in Colorado beat Mark Udall. And this was one of the most depressing ones, because as I was saying, as I was trying to talk my parents off the ledge this week, we didn't lose a lot of great Democrats in this race, but we did lose 2 of them.
Well, we lost a lot of Democrats who won in red or purple states, who won in 2008, because it's now their 6-year term is up, and they won in the big Obama wave.
Right. And a lot of these people were people that were making trouble in the Senate anyway, because they were holding up Democratic legislation because they were so conservative.
Yeah.
They were sort of the Ben Nelsons of remember Ben Nelson who tried to ruin Obamacare? You try to forget Ben Nelson all the time,
can't.
But you can't.
Because
I've named a type of senator after him. But so Mark Udall is one of the few really great.
Right, he was a big civil liberties person. Like, he was really, and you know what I read actually, because he was one of the ones who sort of like is really into the sort of like, you know, the NSA.
So
he sort of is like really on the side of sort of like the civil libertarians that are like really wanting to like get all of that like out into the air or whatever. And like there's a big push now that within the lame duck, because he's in until January, that he should try and
should
get as
it.
Much of that stuff like out into the air before he like
absolutely.
Goes. And I totally agree.
Losing in this kind of a race. I'm hoping will be a very exciting lame duck session because it's sort of like a last gasp kind of situation, it's shaping up to be for a few reasons that
we're going to talk about later.
And
it really could be.
Yeah, the other seat that we lost that's a major tragedy for America is we lost Tom Harkin's seat. We knew we were going to lose Tom Harkin's seat because he's retiring, but we lost the seat as a party as well because we, as a party, chose to run the world's most boring human being.
Right, exactly.
So Joni Ernst now is going to be a conspiracy theorist who is also a senator.
Yeah, exactly.
So, welcome. A motorcycle enthusiast conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
who is now Senator Joni Ernst.
Yeah. There was an open seat in Georgia.
Right, we lost.
Michelle Nunn was running for. That was supposed to be sort of close. It ended up being like 8%. A lot of Democrats are sort of trying to silver lining this because we haven't had really any chance in hell there recently. And
no,
the
and
fact
this was
Saxby
Chambliss' seat. It,
was
it wasn't like
right. and
some
the
random
fact, the
Democrat.
Fact that he... that Michelle Nunn was within 8 points in a Republican wave year in a very classically red state has a lot of Democrats thinking that it might
Georgia
be worth
might
spending
be
some time there in 2016 yeah. in a presidential race.
I so could sort of see that. I mean, something. Georgia has major urban areas.
Yeah, I
don't
I mean, there's
see
no reason why you shouldn't be able to make some inroads.
No, exactly.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Pat Roberts kept his seat, beating the independent in
right.
Kansas.
Kansas
Greg
did
Orman.
All the wrong things.
Kansas fucked everything up. We'll right. talk a lot about Kansas because of them ruining everything.
Yeah.
But that was the state where they had a third-party candidate step in, and the Democrats stepped out. Right. And he was going to caucus with... That's not a huge loss because he was sort of going to caucus with whoever.
With whoever, right.
So he was not some great... Like, if he had won instead of Pat Roberts,
would
still
would
have
still be
a House majority. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so that
exactly.
doesn't help anyone.
And that was not... A lot of these... I think the sort
yeah,
of...
that was not close.
The sort of upsetting thing, I think... for the night was that a lot of these races that were sort of, you know, they've been saying that the pollsters were also losers in this race
yeah.
too, because like the things were not close.
Yeah.
A lot of them, you know,
well,
many of them were way off of what the polling
never
has
that
been
more true than in, McConnell, Lundgren and Grimes
16
race.
Points.
Kentucky was a
out of the
fucking
water.
Mess. That
yeah.
was one of, that was the first one to be called of the night of the, mm-hmm. of these races. I was in a state of panic immediately
so
after because that was I was pinning all my hopes on that
I know.
Race.
You and I both talked last week. We were like, well, if it's a tragic night, yours was this race.
Right.
You would like, we would all feel better if Allison Lundgren Grimes at least wins, even if we lose all of the other races.
Right.
That didn't happen.
No.
I said the same thing about the Scott Walker governor's race.
Which seemed very...
In Wisconsin, which
that
seemed
like a legit possibility.
Neither of those happened. So
no.
both of our doomsday scenarios
happened. This was the most doomsday scenario that you could possibly imagine. And what made it worse was the fact that this was like declared so early and so decisively, like way before all the results were in.
Yeah.
Like they were just like, oh no, she's
That's
not going to win. Sorry. And she
did.
It wasn't even close.
Didn't. Yeah.
There is still going to be a runoff in Louisiana. Chances are that Mary Landrieu is going to lose that seat.
Right, she actually won,
but she
like,
won,
42 to 41.
She won
but,
the general,
like, there was
yeah.
a there was a sort of further right candidate, Tea Party person, who got, like, 13% of the vote. So you can sort of
like,
assume
those
that
people aren't going to be like, you know who we really
like
them?
She doesn't have voters that are going to add to her 42%.
Exactly.
You know, but...
So it'll be Senator Bill Cassidy from...
Bill Cassidy has 13 more
right.
percent of people who can probably...
He's
going to
be a person
so.
Who wins a seat. Although...
Right.
I
the Democrats have already said that they're not spending money down there. Like,
they're
you
not.
Would, you would think that like they would maybe like throw her a bone. But
yeah.
it's sort of like... It's a... I don't
it's a
really,
losing battle.
I don't think they like her that much either.
Well, she's
you
an
know
asshole.
What? On...
She's not a Democrat. I mean, like, I know that you want to have these seats in these red states because
right.
it's good for just sort
and
of like majority. It's
right.
it's good numerically to have these seats, but she's not really a Democrat. She doesn't
no.
really help the Democratic Party further their agenda
no.
because
and
she's constantly fighting against it. So
right,
like,
she's
her.
Fighting against it. And the other thing that we had talked about, like, when... She was sort of in line. Now she's, of course, we're not the party in charge, but she was going to be our next up on the energy
yeah,
committee.
And, she
and she's not who you want
on
energy.
She's
terrible
on
energy.
She's from an oil
as
state.
As a Democrat. Yeah,
so
she's from an oil state. So it's sort of like, why not just swap her out with a freaking Republican who's
yeah.
from an oil state on some level? And because that was her big thing. Energy was always her big thing.
Exactly.
And it was always, she was on the always on the wrong side of wherever the Democrats were on it because she just wanted to drill everywhere.
Yeah.
So...
She's a drill baby drill Democrat.
Yeah.
Also by Kay Hagan, a sort of similarly conservative Democratic senator.
Lost
Tom
Tillis, North Carolina.
Unsurprisingly won that race. I know that race was close, but I was sort of like, North Carolina is not a place where I'm
right.
trying to think they care about
yeah.
Kay Hagan.
So literally every state that was considered to be a toss-up, they won.
Yeah, went Republican.
Yeah.
The only one that... sort of squeaked by in the toss-up category.
Yeah. Well, I don't even think that they were really considering that a toss-up. I think that was closer than anybody sort of
yeah.
like was comfortable with.
Well, which one are you talking about?
Oh, I'm talking about Virginia.
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah. I'm talking about New Hampshire.
Oh, right.
We have
yeah.
two on the list next.
Two, right.
One of them is Virginia. I don't think... Mark Warner beat Ed Gillespie, but it was not...
Barely.
Yeah, it was not... It was not the kind of astounding victory that you would
right.
hope for in that situation.
And that's another... If you... In the same way that you can sort of find... You know, a silver lining for the Democrats in Georgia. Republicans are real silver
yeah,
lining this one because we've won. Obama's
silver
won there
lining
the last couple,
the shit out
the
of
last couple times, and Terry McAuliffe had won
That's
recently.
A state...
But like this was this was like this to was the point very was close. Like they waited to call this yeah. because they had to make yeah, sure it was, everything
it,
was counted.
They waited forever to call it.
Yeah.
They waited like a full day to call it.
Yeah.
The next day someone was finally like, "Oh, they called it." And I was yeah. like, "Oh, I didn't realize we yeah. were still waiting for that." Jesus yeah. Christ. I will say that I feel like cuz Virginia I think is one of the most interesting states sort of from an election perspective because I think that more than probably any other state, they gain a huge boost from turnout because it is a state that has like a region that's so heavily Democratic and right. so populated
yeah.
that they can blow the rest of the state out of the water. So in a year like this, when they don't really have like such an exciting race going on, I think people in those sort of that DC sort of ring probably yeah. don't turn out in the numbers that they would for a presidential year when they're all really engaged because anyone who yeah. like is within a stone's throw of DC is like hearing about a presidential race like right. nonstop.
Yeah.
And so I think, and you know, we always talk about how in Virginia, like it always looks really dire until the last possible moment.
I was talking
moment.
To someone. It may have even been you. I don't remember.
I think it was me.
Because yeah, I remember this in the last presidential race. Wait, it's one of the things where like the big populated area for whatever reason is always the last one to come in. Probably because it has the most people.
It has so the most whatever. People and it probably, the polls probably close later because it's probably urban.
Right.
I mean, there's so many reasons, like rural areas, the polls in Kentucky, the polls closed at like 6 p.m. So yeah. like everyone knew what was going to happen immediately yeah. because everyone had already voted by yeah. the time that people were just like heading to the polls in California. So I think in Virginia, the areas outside D.C., the polls probably close later than they do in the rest
they
of the
might.
State.
They might, yeah. But that was like one of the ones where like you, even with like 96% of the vote
you
in,
never know.
You don't know who's going yeah. to win because it's all coming from that area around D.C. So it's like, all right, you just have to wait. You have to
right.
wait.
You gotta
have to
be
wait
patient with Virginia.
All of those votes are going to be Democratic. You just have to wait for them to come in. And that's exactly what happened.
Exactly.
But you had to wait till the next day. So that was kind of scary.
Yeah. So the toss-up race that I was referring to was New
sorry.
Hampshire.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how could you know? We had a list. I went out of order. I
you
ruined
did.
I ruined the list. But Jean Shaheen kept her seat, which that yeah. was a very close race. And that would have been very embarrassing for my impression of New Hampshire.
Right.
Because Scott Brown is a full carpetbagger.
Yeah.
He's not even like a minor carpetbagger. He can't pretend
yeah.
like he's not. Like, he is a person who was a senator in one state and then was like, you know what? You're not going to elect
right.
me again. I failed. I'll move to this other state and you can elect me there. Like, that
yeah.
is not a thing.
Yeah, he's now
don't have a close race with this guy.
Right. He's been a senator from one state.
He's just trying to be New England senator.
Right, exactly. That's not how it works.
That's not how it works.
No.
So, I'm a little annoyed that New Hampshire even had it be this close. I know
yeah.
he's a very moderate Republican, but, like, go fuck yourselves. Like, you really were going to vote for the former failed senator who was just an appointee. He never got elected.
Yeah.
Like, the failed appointee from Massachusetts, it's like you're taking their rejects.
Yeah.
Like, don't be that state.
Yeah.
That's a terrible plan.
No, it's a terrible plan.
In any case, we also lost big in the governor's category.
Ooh. Bad. This is actually, I think, a lot
this
of people.
This is more troubling.
I think
than the
a
thing.
Lot of people are thinking this is more troubling. Of course, the Senate was the big news because it's always sort of like, who's going to take back over the Senate?
Yeah. Well,
no
and also in the Senate, you have sort of national implications.
Right.
Whereas if Wisconsin wants to fuck themselves over, ultimately, that probably doesn't affect my day to day life. It
right.
is terrible as a precedent to set
right.
and terrible as a sort of predictor of, you know, the next presidential year. But like, it doesn't have the same kind of...
That's where I think everyone
yeah.
is sort of... Because, you know, I heard someone explain it pretty well. It's sort of like, you know, Democrats have, like, a higher starting point for, like, what their, you know, base number of Electoral College votes is.
Right.
When you sort of, like, just assume... When you count in all of the votes that you can just assume are going to go blue, we start at a higher point. Which
right.
is nice.
Right.
It means there's less toss-ups that you have to win.
But the issue
the
is...
The problem is that we lost governorships... In a few of those states.
Well, and more importantly, when you lose governorships in those states, you lose the power to redistrict in a way that is nonpartisan.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly.
And so in a lot of these states, the way that they get districted sort of determines that it's the reason that the House is sort of never going to be a Democratic House again.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't have more people every time there's an election, more Democrats turn out to vote than Republicans.
Yeah.
That always happens.
Yeah.
And the fact that we never actually win anything with that, with all those votes, is a problem.
Yeah. So anyway, we lost Rick Scott, beat Charlie Crist in Florida, which, I mean,
guys,
come on. Like, I get that, like, Charlie Crist is like,
yeah,
he's probably a little bit of a douchebag. He's
a little bit.
he's a color that is similar to John Boehner that is not found in nature. So that's off-putting.
That's off.
You
right.
know, but I mean,
he's a Republican who was running as a Democrat, which is suspicious.
Right. But Rick Scott, guys, come on.
He's an actual dumb person.
He's not the answer.
No.
At all. And he also looks like Voldemort.
He looks so much like Voldemort.
He looks like
a snake. Like a cartoon villain.
Yeah. I mean, don't vote for him. So don't. Neither of, look, I get it. Neither of them
should
be governor.
That wasn't a great choice.
You didn't
have all the options right. that you'd want.
And I feel bad for
I don't feel that bad,
because
what kind of fucking Democratic nonsense talkers thought, you know what, we'll
let
Charlie Crist run.
Run.
Run anybody else. Any other Democrat in the whole fucking state.
Yeah, find anybody.
I'm cursing a lot because I'm angry this time.
Yeah, that's fine.
But this
Your
one
mom's
especially.
Not gonna be happy, but she can deal. She'll give you a, I think
she'll
she's going to
give me a pass for this one.
Yeah.
But this is not an acceptable thing to be doing as a Democratic Party.
Well, it's not the answer.
No. The Skywalker situation.
I mean, stop reelecting him too. You
guys,
called him once.
Yeah. Like,
you as a people thought to yourselves,
you know what? We made a mistake here.
I hate this
here.
Man so much.
That it's,
I want to vote to kick him out of office.
Yeah.
And then you've reelected him again.
Like,
don't do that.
Guys, it's just, it's so easy to not reelect him.
Oh, God.
It's so easy.
This was, I get it, because, like, on some level, there were a lot of people who voted for him in the recall election who were just sort of, like, vaguely against, like,
recalling
having
people.
A recall.
Yeah.
Which I...
Sure.
I
That's a
get
position.
On some level. I still think it's stupid. If you had the chance to vote against him, then you should have
right.
done it. But, like, on some level, I get it. You don't think that you should have a recall. The recall is stupid. It cost a bunch of money. So, like, you're going to reelect him
right.
there.
You're just feeling grumbly.
This is just an actual election that
chance.
You could have... This was your chance.
Yeah.
Right here.
This is it.
You
and I get Mary Burke is not America's
she's
hero.
Not it.
She's terrible.
No.
I get it. She was
right.
basically campaigning
person.
On her own money because she's so rich. Fine. That's a problem for everyone. That doesn't mean that you have to elect Scott Walker, though.
Don't have that
anything
plan.
Else. Anything else.
Yeah.
So that was horribly disappointing. Also, Kansas
yeah.
reelected Brown back.
Yeah. And you want to know why? I actually heard them talking about this.
I would
this
love
on,
to know why, because
well,
this I really don't understand.
Well,
he has fucked them over.
You... Even after I explain you the why, it's only going to make it more head-scratching
oh, excellent.
For you. But anyway, I heard they were talking about this on Bill Maher recently. The latest issue that happened in this campaign is that whoever was Sam Brownback was running against, I can't remember, it came out that when he was like 20 years ago, he'd gone to a strip club.
Oh.
And that was it. It was over
what?
At that point. A strip club. Not even like paid for a prostitute, but like he got a lap dance. At some point.
Sam Brownback is a man who doesn't understand basic math.
Sam Brownback ran your state into the fucking ground, and you voted for him because...
Some guy went to a strip club?
Nope. That's not it.
Learn from an example that the voters of New York are setting a lot, where they get mad at somebody for doing something terrible, and then they vote them into something else. Elliot Spitzer is a guy who repeatedly runs for office in New York because
yeah.
people like him.
Yeah.
He doesn't always win. That's fine. But he's able to keep running because people like him. So the man had a prostitute. All right.
Yeah.
Whatever. Like, don't be the people that can't mentally, like, process the idea of a rich white man going
yeah.
to a strip club.
I mean, Sam
Guys,
Sam,
don't vote for
right.
rich white men at all if that's your problem.
Right. Sam Brownback literally turned your state into a broke shanty town.
Yeah.
And you
think of where you guys started from.
Him.
Like, you deserve what you get. Kansas, in this case, I feel like Wisconsin, I feel bad about because that was sort of one of the birthplaces of the labor movement, and I feel very bad about what's happening over
yeah.
there to unions. Kansas, I feel like you made your bed.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear any more from you, but I also don't want any of my tax dollars to go to this nonsense.
I know, seriously.
And
then Wendy Davis lost by like
that's
20%.
Not a surprise.
That's not a surprise.
But
I think there were people who, again, probably weren't paying attention who were like, oh my God, I can't believe she lost by that much. But that
was like,
that was a fool's errand.
Exactly. Like, no, I mean, it was a great way of sort of building some excitement for
yes.
the Democrats there. It
yes.
was a very exciting election. She
and
certainly had my email address, so I know that they were sending a lot of emails to people.
Yeah.
By the way, I would like to take this moment on an unrelated note to address the issues that we've been having with Julia Brownlee, a person who we don't know or
she's
live in the district of.
She's currently in a recount.
Yeah.
She's still asking me for money.
She's still...
She can't use to do anything with
there's
her
There's a few
a
troubling
recount.
Things about Julia Brownlee. Now, both of us have repeatedly mentioned that we've had some issues getting off Wendy Davis's list. We don't live in Texas. I was never going to give money to that campaign. I feel very good about her filibuster. I feel very good about her running for office.
Yep.
I wasn't going to contribute to her campaign. Sorry about it.
Yeah.
Like, it was a fool's errand. We knew
yeah.
it was a fool's errand. I feel... I'm glad that they found sort of like a worthy candidate
yes.
in that state. I think she's a great advocate. Like, great. I wasn't going to donate. Didn't need 75 emails a day.
Yeah.
Now, Julia Brownlee is someone I feel even less connected to. She's a congressperson from a not nearby, I mean, like a slightly nearby district
from the
in California.
She's or
from,
like,
Ventura.
Ventura.
Yeah. Somewhere that's not right
here. Just like an hour away from here.
Sure. She's not in our district. She's not one of the high profile congresspeople from this area. She's just like a person who.
Well,
has
she just finished her first term. I mean, she's a
woman. Insatiable need for money.
she couldn't stop herself.
She
has an addiction. She's. To asking for money. And she was like,
money.
She was the queen of, I mean, Nancy Pelosi got a little dire too, but Julia Brownlee was basically like, send me $5 or I'm going to jump off the bridge that I'm currently standing on right this second.
And you get like 3 emails a day from her about that.
At least.
Like, here's the thing, Julia Brownlee. Brent and I live in Adam Schiff's district. Right. It's a safe seat. Right. We don't give money to his campaign. We don't like him. We vote for him anyway. Life moves on.
Right.
We feel very badly about Waxman leaving because we used to be in his district.
Yep.
So maybe that's a race I was slightly invested in. That's fine.
The Democrat won there.
Everything's okay. I don't know anything about your district, Julia Brownlee, but what I do know is when I ask to unsubscribe from an email list,
you can't.
I expect you to fucking unsubscribe me.
Well, here's the thing. She has so many different email lists because like every single email first comes from like
from
a different
address.
Like it comes from Julia's iPad or she's like forwarding you things from like other people.
Here's
like,
another thing that happened though. I went to their website, clicked unsubscribe, like the only unsubscribe option on the sheet, and they sent me a confirmation that said, "We have unsubscribed you from most of Julia Brownlee's emails."
Well, they lost track at a certain point.
There was literally no way to fully unsubscribe from her list.
You couldn't.
So I went on a Twitter rampage.
Yeah.
I've been tweeting at Julia Brownlee's campaign nonstop. And if you want to join me, her Twitter handle is JuliaBrownlee26, and I would recommend it. Because as much as I understand that Democrats need money, and as much as I understand the compulsion to, like, constantly be asking for donations, because that's what they do, I don't like feeling like I'm being harassed, and I think they went overboard in this election.
They totally went
and
overboard.
And I don't think that it equaled turnout. I don't think that that's how you get turnout. You know, in our article, in our blog post, one of the things that we talk about is sort of, like, you know, how you can be a person who contributes to turnout. Because turnout for Democrats is really the whole game.
Yeah.
If there's good turnout.
When Democrats vote, Democrats win.
When Democrats vote, Democrats win. When there's good turnout, Democrats win. And so that's one of the things that we talk about. And I've been thinking a lot about how to engage younger voters who maybe are cord cutters. I didn't see a single campaign commercial this entire cycle. Not because they weren't running them, but because I don't watch television.
Yeah.
You know, I don't, like, I got all of those mailers, but I was not going to ever read any of those mailers. And all I got was like harassing campaign emails. I felt like I was under siege. I had to go through and unsubscribe from every email list that I was on because I was getting so much junk mail. Like that was not an answer.
Right.
And I think that the Democrats need to figure out how to create viral content with those email lists instead of creating fundraising pleas. Because I think that that will be ultimately,
it's just an immediate
delete. Here's the thing.
Like throughout the like last couple months, like what would happen would be I would wake up.
I would have 25 emails.
I would wake up at 9 o'clock. Right. So the emails had already been sent. I should be getting up earlier than that, but you know,
life
so
goes
shoot
on.
Me. So and I would literally blindly delete however many emails
there
that I had
is like
received.
A website, I mean, that you can go to unsubscribe from like all of your
but I tried
junk
that
email
too.
Lists. I tried that too. Within a day, I was back on the DCCC's email list and getting fucking Julia Brownlee's emails still.
Yeah.
Julia Brownlee, you can't get away from.
Right.
She's like the CIA. She can follow you anywhere.
She can't.
But I think that, you know, I think that the Democrats are struggling to figure out how to engage young voters. I think that that's why they leaned so heavily on the email thing, because Obama's people did that to great success. And they thought that. But this is the thing, is doing that kind of doing advertising on the web is free. It's not like advertising for TV. And so this model of like constantly harassing everyone for money has to change, because I was never going to give them money, but I might have helped them forward their message to my social media, you know, people.
There's no message.
There was no message in any of those emails. If there had been a message in those emails that was not just like sheer panic and blind terror and was instead something that was like a thing that I could pass on that was educational, that I could help my network understand.
Yeah.
I think that would have been a smarter way to approach it. I think they would have an easier time engaging young voters.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, when we're talking about, like, you know, take responsibility for your network. Like, you can't make everyone in America could vote. Fine. Take responsibility for that you can make vote.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to start posting more about, like, how to have these conversations, because I think it's hard to figure out how to have these conversations. But I think that this is one of the reasons that, you know, I think that Wendy Davis is someone who could have been a great PR victory for them and was for a long time. And instead of me just getting harassing emails asking for money from her, I wanted to get emails that were not asking me for money, but were asking me to pass on information.
Or
both, I guess.
But at the same time.
But the thing is, when you send the fundraising emails, and you know the email is going to be a fundraising email, so you don't ever read the message in the email, because even if they sent the content with the fundraising email, you would know that at the very least it was a fundraising email.
Yeah.
If they were sending interesting content and helping that get, you know, go viral, then that would be an easier way to get young voters engaged.
I agree.
In any case.
And eyeballs.
And eyeballs. And it's all about eyeballs. And especially for young voters, you're not going to be able to buy their votes the way that you could older generations, because they don't own televisions.
Right.
So figure out another way to do it. And the other way to do it is free. So, like, figure that shit out.
Yeah.
Because Julia Brownlee cannot get away with this any longer.
No, she can't.
Anyway. Yes. Moving on.
Just wrapping up the governor's races.
Right. Wrapping up the governor races.
And these are the races that we were talking specifically about, sort of like that impeded on the Democratic firewall, sort of, if you will.
We did easily win New York and California, unsurprisingly. Cuomo and Brown. Right. And that's, I think, a sign that in states where people are engaged, Democrats vote and everyone wins.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. Everyone was winning there.
But we barely won in Connecticut. And that's like
a huge... We had some embarrassments.
Yeah, some embarrassments. Barely won in Connecticut. And then Pat Quinn lost in Illinois. We lost the Illinois governorship. Now, what I will say about that, and this was sort of like a lot of... You know, one of the other things that we talked about in our blog is having better candidates.
Yeah,
and
yes.
You get to pick your candidate.
Yeah,
granted,
that's what the primary system is about.
Pat Quinn is the current governor, so I understand why he was the candidate, but he's hated.
He's not a well-liked guy.
No one likes him. Whoever was running for, whoever their Senate candidate, I can't remember, he's the one who's been in the Senate forever, from Dick Durbin.
Oh, yeah.
He won like 60-something to 30-something.
Yeah, he's an institution.
In his Senate race, and so... You know, the same.
So you had
people,
Democrats at the polls.
You had Democrats who voted, you know, 60% or whatever for Dick Durbin, and then, you know, 20% of those people voted against Pat Quinn.
Yeah.
That's, you can't have that. And I understand, like, that we can sit around and talk about, like, oh, well, we only lost because we had a bad candidate, but, like, that's, like, the world's worst excuse. Like,
that's not the answer.
Why did you have a bad candidate?
No, exactly.
Like, don't have bad candidates.
Well, and this is why we really lost our shit a few months ago when Chuck Schumer suggested that Democrats just unify around Hillary because we don't want to have a long, drawn-out primary. This is what the primary season is for.
Well, right.
Find yourself a candidate.
Right. We've talked about this in 100 different times, specifically, and we talked about it in the blog, too. Just, if you take Iowa, for example, Bruce Braley, who is the world's most boring human, ran unopposed because everyone just sort of assumed that he was the next in line. He was already a current congressperson.
Right. They didn't want to look unified. They wanted to look like they were throwing their full support behind
him. So what happened is he did not have a primary, and no one realized he was a giant fuck-up until he was already in a general against Joni Ernst.
No, there's literally no reason to turn your back on the primary system. I get, if someone had primaried Pat Quinn, that would have been embarrassing for the party, and it would have been embarrassing for Pat Quinn, and it would have been great for voters in Illinois, because they could have gotten a chance to get rid of Pat Quinn when it counted, and then they could have gone on and had
a
real candidate.
And then you would have a Democratic governor currently, like, because you would have had a candidate that you didn't hate.
Exactly. The thing that you do when you have a candidate that's not working out is you primary them. That's how you get rid of incumbents that are terrible.
Yeah.
It happens all the time. The Tea Party got to power doing that.
They've been doing it
They're geniuses at primarying people.
Yeah. They were the ones who turned it into a fucking verb.
Exactly. So the Democrats can do that too. And we don't have to have wacko, you know, communists run. Like, it's not that we have to have, like, crazy left-wing people doing it.
You just have to have someone that you hate less than Pat Quinn.
That's so easy. It's so easy to find that person.
Right?
Like, literally any person in the state of Illinois probably could have done that.
Yeah.
So a dog probably could. Like, there are just so many options. So, why we're suddenly a party who can't handle the thought of primarying people after it's proven a wild success.
Works great.
Works great for the Republicans. Like, Don't let this happen.
Right.
Also,
Maryland.
Don't be Maryland.
Oh my God. That is like the deepest blue state here that was the sort of like the most troubling. And also, it was so troubling too because Martin O'Malley is the outgoing governor there, and it was his lieutenant governor who lost. And a lot of the prognosticators out there are sort of like, this might just be too embarrassing for him to run for president because
I know. And he's one of our hopes.
He's like the guy who sort of like everybody knew like basically like years ago that he was intending to run for president. Like he's all but declared. And this is like, he couldn't pass on his governorship in a deep blue state to his own lieutenant governor. That's bad.
That is bad. That's not what you want.
And we also lost in Massachusetts.
Massachusetts.
You can't do that
Stop
either.
Yourself.
Come on.
Remember when Mitt Romney was your governor?
Yeah. That wasn't. You did get healthcare, I guess, at that point. So maybe they're longing for those days. I don't know.
Maybe they just assume that Republican governors bring them more social services or something in Massachusetts.
That's wrong.
But that's wrong, guys. and so don't let that happen.
Yeah. We did win in Pennsylvania, which was actually a pretty big pickup.
Yeah.
So that was. And he won by a lot, too. Tom Wolf won by a lot.
Hated Tom Corbett over there. They hated him.
Yeah.
So that was a positive thing. Yeah. And then there were all the propositions. And what's so interesting about this election year was that we lost everything that mattered in terms of seats.
Right.
And we there were very progressive propositions that passed at the same time that people were voting out perfectly qualified candidates and voting in terrible people.
Right. Well, and that's one of the things that we talked about, you know, again, in the blog. We really talked about this.
This blog is like, blog entry.
It's the best.
Yeah.
I mean, if you haven't been convinced by now to read it, then
there's no convincing
you. We can't convince you. But I mean, you know, people voted for like really progressive propositions all over the country in states that also elected Republicans.
Yeah.
Which is like,
so weird.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
That's not
the plan.
That's not the answer. If you like, if you're Nebraska and you voted for a giant minimum wage increase, then like, don't send 60% of your vote to the Republican Senate candidate.
No.
Like,
that's the wrong plan.
That guy doesn't think the federal minimum wage should exist.
Exactly. like guys.
You didn't do it right.
That's wrong. You did it wrong.
You messed up.
You messed that up.
Yeah.
So California had very boring propositions, so we won't really bore you with what happened here, except for that insurance one that I'm pissed that didn't pass.
Yeah.
But
I'm certain that just, like I said, got the no vote because they didn't know.
There was also 46, which was that proposition about like raising the... like
right, and drug testing doctors.
Drug testing doctors and ratings.
So random.
Cap for suing people. So, like, that was the only one I've ever voted no on just because I literally didn't understand what was what I was supposed to do.
Well, but you couldn't understand that one because it had like,
no one endorsed it either. I will say this, because as informed as a person can be about voting on these things, you require some endorsements from some people you trust just so that you know that you didn't misread the very confusing language that's in these proposition.
Because what are you going to do?
Primers.
Are you really going to sit down and you're going to try and read the legislation? And
well, and you're not a lawyer. You don't know what the loopholes are.
You don't know what the loopholes are. You don't know what the repercussions are of voting for either of them. That's what makes
this
whole...
That's what's terrible about the proposition system.
About this.
You're not a legislator with a staff.
No, you know
you're
who is?
A legislator who has a staff. That's why the proposition system should not be a thing.
Right.
It should really only exist for things that legislators can't in good conscience like vote on.
Right.
Like term limits, you know.
Right.
I think that belongs on a proposition because I'm not going to let the legislators decide for themselves. Exactly. People love term limits.
Right.
But my point is that this bullshit should not exist. With that said, we did some great voting this year. DC and Oregon both legalized recreational marijuana.
Yep.
In DC, it's possible that Congress can just veto it because they can veto anything. DC has the worst government system in the world.
It's kind of sad.
They have great actual legislators there, but they don't have any power to do anything. So it's too bad because Congress can reject anything. Guam became the first U.S. territory to legalize medical marijuana,
which is
a thing. And then Florida rejected medical marijuana because they're stupid.
Yeah. Well, they were
doing the wrong things at the polls. But they were the only state that did that wrong.
Yeah.
And then last week we talked about those abortion measures that were on the ballot in North Dakota, Colorado, and Tennessee. North Dakota and Colorado voted against personhood amendments.
Right, and the Colorado one.
The Colorado
one
was really infuriating because they were trying to sort of make it sound like it was about murder.
I'm kind of surprised like North Dakota. Good for you, people.
Yeah, good for you.
North Dakota.
Yeah. Tennessee passed a very restrictive abortion measure that was going to basically make it so their state constitution like doesn't protect your right to have an abortion at all. I don't know, like, how can they
do that
with the Supreme Court I think that's going to go to the courts.
It's going to go to the courts.
It's going to be terrible when it goes to the courts.
I think we talked about this last week, too. I think that a lot of the plan here was to get to the courts with one of these things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, to force them to hear it.
Yeah, and they knew that was going to pass in Tennessee, and it passed by quite a big margin, The great news, though, was about minimum wage.
Yeah.
Some deep red states passed minimum wage increases.
Yeah.
Arkansas voted to raise the minimum wage to $8.50 on a large margin.
All huge margins.
You know, two-thirds of the voters voted for that there.
Yeah.
Nebraska, same thing, similar margin. They're going to raise their minimum wage to $9.
Yep.
In Alaska, where they can't elect a person for any sort of office, almost 70% of the electorate voted to raise the minimum wage to $9.75.
Yep.
And it had been $7.75, so that's a pretty large increase. Yeah. And South Dakota raised to $8.50.
Yeah. Now, and all four of these states elected Republican senators.
Yeah, that's right.
All four of them had races.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and,
no.
And they all elected Republicans.
So that's a problem, guys.
It's like, you have to know. You have to know. If you think to yourself, God, this minimum wage increase sounds like a real great idea.
Right.
And then you vote for Mike Rounds.
Yeah.
In South Dakota.
You made the wrong choice.
You can't vote wrong. I was going to say, you voted wrong on one of the things.
Right.
Now, if it was the minimum wage increase, then fine. If it was Mike Rounds, then fine. But
we respect your right to have an opinion,
right.
But not to have two opinions.
that contradict each other.
That's too many opinions.
No, that's right.
No, you can't. No. Yeah, you can't do that.
No.
And then Washington was the only state that passed any sort of gun control measures. I would like to see more states getting involved in this business.
Yeah.
But they passed a measure that would require people buying guns online and at gun shows to do extensive background checks, which is nice of them.
And thank God for Alabama really leading the way in America.
Whew. If you were worried that Alabama was about to fall into the evils of Sharia law, rest easy.
Not any longer.
It's not going to happen.
No.
They passed Amendment 1, which amends their constitution to ban all, quote, foreign laws. Now, it was obviously intended to target Sharia law, but there were actually a lot of evangelical Christians that were pissed because it also sort of, because the language is vague.
Now you can't pass evangelical
Christian laws right. either. So that's a problem for probably most of the citizens of Alabama. Right.
Exactly.
But we're glad to know that neither Sharia law nor crazy Christian law will...
That may have incidentally made Alabama a better place to be.
Who knew?
Unknowingly to everyone who voted for it,
exactly.
I think probably. But
it was one of those things where the guy who proposed it had explicitly proposed a law that was to ban Sharia law in like 2012 or something.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen. And so he just sort of like renamed it and made it vaguer and then reintroduced this bill, and everyone was like, That sounds good.
You know, and I think that it's great that all of these ballot propositions passed, but I think it brings up another point that we would be remiss to not talk about. And I think that it is, you know, I think on a lot of levels, we ran people in this election who I think for whatever reason, whether it was just because, you know, they were trying to run away from Obama or they were trying to do this or whatever they were trying to do, really did not run on a lot of like, you know, the real democratic principles.
Yes.
Like you didn't hear people like really running for like really raising the minimum wage and for like really hammering home on gun control and for, you know, all
these
of these things
that are hugely popular. This is how someone like Elizabeth Warren gets elected.
Right. Exactly.
Is by talking about those kinds of issues. Democrats really like to hear that stuff. They get excited about it. They turn out to vote for it. Young people turn up to the polls to vote for that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, I actually read an article that, of all of the people who campaigned for some of these senators and House races and things, she had the best record of people who she went and campaigned for. Like, bet she had better than Hillary Clinton, better than Joe Biden, better than, you know, a lot of other sort of like high profile Democrats who sort of like went out and campaigned for some of these people. She had the best win to loss record. It still wasn't great because we lost everything.
We lost everything.
But I mean, you know.
Yeah, because she's so damn likable.
Well, she's so damn likable. And
seems so competent and smart and talks about things people want to hear.
Well, right. And I think that that's probably because, A, she chose people who sort of like were talking about things that, you know, she wants to talk about. Obviously, that's... But, you know, those are the people who won. Also, the other thing that I read, too, is that, you know, most people really didn't want to be even so much as seen in the same room with President Obama. The few places that he went... They won, too. The guy in Michigan was in a really tight race, and he was like, yeah, come and campaign for me. He ended up winning by a fairly large margin. You know, you have to fire up your base.
Yeah.
And
he's great at that.
The thing is that the base still loves Obama.
Well, and this is the other thing, is because I was talking about this with my parents, because, you know, my parents and I often feel disappointed with Obama's actual record.
Yeah.
But I was saying, like, the reason that someone like Obama comes and wins a race that some old hand like Hillary can't is because he finds voters in new places.
Yes.
And in the places that he went to campaign, I bet he found voters. I bet there were voters that don't show up in any old election year that showed up because he was there.
Right.
And so those voters still love him.
Right. Not only that, I would agree. Yes, I think you're
right. And I think the same was with Liz Warren.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And not only do they find new voters, but you can't get new voters if the voters that you already have are not super excited about voting for the candidate.
Exactly.
And he has the ability to do that. Even if it's only 30% of the people who are going to vote, him coming can get those 30% really remembering why they like to vote in the first place.
Exactly.
And that's important.
Yeah. No, one, this is one of the things that I, you know, feel like we hopefully will, we won't, but I wish that we would learn from this election is that Democrats really need to think differently about how they're going to approach their base and who their base is. And part of what they need to think about is what kinds of candidates can exist with the type of base that they currently have.
Agree.
Their base right now, the base that elected Obama was young. It mm-hmm. was urban. It was people that were excited about voting for the first time.
And it was further to the left.
And it was further to the left than they're willing to admit. And Liz Warren is somebody who goes viral very easily. Everything she says ends up on the internet being passed around obsessively by liberals.
Yep.
Those are the people that do your most exciting campaign work, by the way. It's not moderate, undecided people who get people to turn up to vote. It's people on the far left who are so excited to, you know, make sure that something new and exciting happens that they turn, they get their friends and they get involved and they all get people into the process.
If you're a voter in North Carolina and Hillary Clinton is there trying to get Kay Hagan reelected, like that is like a
that could be more of a
snore fest.
Yeah.
Like that's not doing anything.
But if you have a young, exciting candidate who knows how to say something that'll go viral on the internet, who knows how to talk about the issues that, or who's willing to talk about the issues that you care about, which include things like minimum wage and include things like gay rights and include gun control, it includes things that liberals care about, and then, you know, include and because of that your campaign is able to exist not only in like on television and in newspapers but on the internet.
Right.
Then like you have found new voters.
That's
what Obama did. That's what someone like Liz Warren can do. It's what these old hacks can't do. It's what the establishment candidates can't do.
Yeah.
And if Democrats want to sort of reclaim some of their glory in the next election cycle, I feel like they need to not just think about what candidates have whose turn it is.
That's
but they need to think about who's exciting.
The Republicans have been running whose turn it is for a long time, and
it's never works out for them.
It's not going great.
No, it's not going great. No, it's and that's what we're about to do. But I think we should stop worrying so much about who has the experience that we
have. I don't give a rip whose turn it is.
Fucking experience means nothing in this context because it never seems to get you anything except gridlock.
Yeah.
So I don't care about experience. And it says so much that like Obama has really failed to pass a lot of a lot of his platform has gone dead in the water.
For sure.
A lot of and especially for liberals it was never there in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, I never agreed with him on most things.
Yeah.
But I still feel excited that he's president sort of. And I feel like
level.
A lot of young people still feel excited that he's president.
I agree.
It's exciting that he got to be president. You know, even if he's not doing anything.
Well, I mean he got reelected in a pretty toxic climate.
Exactly.
I mean, you know.
No, it's but that's the beauty of the primary system, guys.
That's it.
It always goes back to the primaries. You can you can find a candidate like that only if you have a primary.
Yeah.
In other news, New York City, like a bunch of
idiots
in Staten Island, where they are idiots, I guess, reelected Michael Grimm to a third term. We're talking about a man who's a congressman who is...
He might not be elected for very long.
No, because he's facing 20 counts of tax fraud.
Yeah, he might be in jail.
He might be in jail. He's said that, or he's sort of indicated that he might step down if he's found guilty. That's so nice of him. But that didn't stop Staten Island from just going ahead. They're not sorry.
God, they
Staten Island politicians are a hilarious bunch. That's not a bunch that really deserves much. And in final election news, so my parents have been running these candidates for town council in upstate New York on anti-fracking platforms.
Oh, yeah.
Because fracking is a big issue up there.
Yeah.
And so part of the reason they were so beside themselves at the end of the election was because these candidates lost. And everyone, you know, they were like, forget it. I don't care anymore. I'm over it. You know, and maybe we're just giving up, you know, which is exactly what my parents say when things look the worst.
Yeah.
So then they're in the city this week and they get a call from someone upstate being like, where are you guys? Like something exciting is happening. And they're like, what? Apparently... because they had run this campaign, it was the first town council campaign that had basically been run in years. You know, it was like a bunch of old hacks that were running it who had never had anyone pay any attention to what they were doing. They had a town council meeting right after the election, and these same voters who went and reelected these idiots showed up and like read them the riot act. It was a packed meeting. People got really upset. People were crying. People were screaming.
Oh my God.
People went crazy and got involved. I mean. And I think now those candidates are going to have some eyeballs on them. And not only that, but there's another town council election next year. And I think that they could probably lose their seats over this. It was a good story about how you have to be patient sometimes.
Right.
This looked like the worst possible outcome.
Yeah.
But it turns out the political culture changed up there.
Yeah.
Enough so that there's real possibilities for the future.
Yeah.
And that was a good story. So I wanted to end on a happy note.
Yay.
Because otherwise, everything we just told you was terrible.
It was depressing. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God. And now we got to listen to a bunch of Republicans talk about what their plan is.
Right. Because
it's not a good one.
They don't have great ideas.
No.
They never did. They don't currently.
Nope.
Yet. I mean, they haven't come up with any since
What's
they won.
What's so funny, though, is like they had like almost months to work this out because they knew they were going to win for a long, like we've known for weeks that they were going to win.
Right.
This is not a surprise.
No.
And as soon as they all got interviewed in the aftermath of this huge blowout, they all said different things about what their priorities were because no one knew what the plan was.
Yeah.
It was like they were in denial about the need to like create a plan that they would then need to use. Like they still think their plan is to just reject everything. Their whole plan is to get rid of stuff.
Right. Now they have to govern.
Now, and their plan to govern is only to get rid of things. They don't have anything they're planning to add to the equation.
Exactly. So a few of the things that we have sort of been hinted at that they're going to do, that they at least think that they can, like, you know, of course, everybody, whenever one of these elections happens, you always sort of hear all of the, like, oh, well, now it's time for some bipartisans, you know, we're really going to work together.
Not.
Like, that's not the plan, obviously. But
also, so, they didn't ever say that this time.
No.
They didn't indicate at all that they planned to work together.
So, supposedly, one of the things is the medical tax repeal in Obamacare. Here, I have a few thoughts on
the medical device tax.
We're gonna
go ahead and repeal it.
Well, see, that's what I was just about to say. There's a few.
If you
things,
need the victory, do it.
Right. There's a few things on this list that I am sort of like, all right, well, fine, exactly. That's one of them. And I think on some level, there are a lot of Republicans who sort of like wish that maybe Obama would have sort of like thrown them a bone. Originally, like when he was first elected, I would contend that he did that by not putting a public option.
Well, I was going to say we did that by far.
Anyway, but like, you know,
no, this
there
is
are
something.
No one. I'm wrong to say no one, but there are a lot of people who think that medical tax should get repealed. So,
well,
like, then
the thing about the medical device tax is it's something that they came up with after they had been voting to get rid of Obamacare repeatedly to no avail.
Right.
So they were like, okay, we need a smaller victory that's doable because we can vote till the cows come home to repeal Obamacare. We're on the record doing it 40 times already. Why not keep going? But we need something that could actually happen.
Do.
So they scoured that law for something that seemed big but was dumb.
Yeah.
And then they were like, aha, we have the medical device tax. People will know that we mean business when we repealed. And everyone's sort of like, all right. Do whatever you want. I don't give a shit.
So if, like, if you're Obama and they send that to you, sign it.
Yeah. No, but the thing is, the only reason at this point that there's any opposition to that is because it's so petty.
I know, exactly.
Like, don't let them have that just because they're being fucking petty.
Sure.
These are the people that wanted to get rid of the law, and now they're like, oh, no, we'll be satisfied if you repeal the medical device tax. That couldn't be a less relevant part of the law if it tried.
I know. The other thing that they claim that they're going to do is that pass a budget through both chambers, which hasn't been done since 2009.
Nice try. Yeah.
Now, I'm all for doing that, but if they're going to try and pass like the Ryan budget, then that's a non-starter.
They're not going to pass it, but this is the thing.
That's going to get vetoed so fast their heads will spin.
When they say that they're planning to do things like this for the first time, what they mean is it's like, oh, we're going to repeal Obamacare from both houses. Now we're going to pass Paul Ryan's budget in both houses. Those aren't
things. None of those things are getting passed.
Those aren't plans.
No.
You don't have full control of the government. So just like go. And also, I have a theory, a personal theory. Would you like to hear it? I'm going to tell it to you. I have a theory that were any of these things actually likely to pass and like go and become law, there would be a lot of Republicans that wouldn't vote for them.
Oh.
I think that there are a lot of Republicans who it's all well and good to repeal Obamacare when you know it's not going to happen. But when the shit hits the fan and you have to answer angry constituents about why they lost their health care, you're not going to want to vote for that law.
Yeah, it's like why nobody ever sort of cuts Social Security and Medicaid.
It's all well and good to talk about that, but when you have to answer to angry constituents about it, it suddenly becomes a lot less appealing. So a lot of these things, I think, are things that it's nice to talk a big game about, but they're only talking a big game because they know that they can't happen.
Yeah, the other thing that they want to do is to approve the construction of the Keystone Pipeline, and I don't think... even a couple years ago, I would have thought maybe Obama would sign this as sort of like a moderate sort of, you know, just job creation sort of thing. But it has become fairly clear within the last few years
that not only
public will, but I think that he really feels like part of his legacy at this point is some of the things that he has done environmentally. And I just don't see him signing
this. I think that's smart of him.
I think that if you wait until 2016 and Hillary Clinton gets elected,
she'll sign the shit out of that.
You can get her to sign it.
Yeah.
She'd be happy to sign
She'll extra sign it. She'll double sign it. She's not sorry.
She'll sign it with authority.
Exactly. But yeah. No, one of the things in sort of representing younger values that Obama, I think, really is trying to at least create some legacy points on are things like the environment and gay rights and these like smaller issues that that young people are sort of unilateral on.
Yeah.
Young people care about the environment. Old people don't have to because they're fucking old.
They're about to die.
They're about to die, so they don't care. Mm-hmm. Young people have to care about the environment. It's the same, you know, all week I've been going on when everyone's talking gloom and doom. Anyone who's older than me, I've been like, don't, it's not fair of you to act like things are hopeless because I am young.
Right.
So like, I still have to live here. Yeah. So you need to at least pretend like there's something to do. Because that is, and you know, I talk about in that blog piece that we're just going to reference repeatedly, I say that someone, an unnamed genius said that nothing can't be undone. I was referring to my mother, who said that in sort of an uncharacteristically optimistic post-election haze in a different election.
That's not who either of you are.
I know. No, but she said that. And that really is the sort of like motto that my mom lives by, because my mom always is ready to do something. She gets depressed about these elections. She gets angry. She
but
says
she, uses
she doesn't want to vote for Democrats anymore. She doesn't, you know, whatever. But she's always ready to like do something about it. And that I feel like is sort of how you have to approach these things.
Yeah.
Is so in any case, that's a tangent.
That's why we love Carla.
But that's that's
one of the many reasons.
Right. That's the only reason we love my mother.
Right.
She said one genius
thing. She's a doer.
Right. but yeah. So in any case.
Another thing is corporate tax reform. I think they can probably come to something. Obama has said for a long time that he's ready to do that. He wants it to be he doesn't want to do it in a way that like where we're going to lose revenue. He wants to do it revenue neutral. So, you know, I mean, cuz you have all the
highest. He wants to make cuts.
So, he wants
what
well,
he's saying.
Well, no, revenue what he means is that I think that he wants to simplify it in a way that is not going to mean that we're going to be getting less money, because we have all these corporations who are sort of, you know, like we have the highest corporate tax
and
rate,
but nobody pays
any taxes. So, I think where they can sort of maybe make some headway is to try and figure out something where, you know, sure, we cut it from 30-something percent to, like, 19%, but then we take out all the loopholes and then everybody has to fucking pay it.
I don't see them doing this.
I mean, I don't know.
We're allowed to disagree.
We are. I mean, I don't think the Republicans would really like to do it, but I think if he got a bill that didn't mean we were going to take in less tax revenue, I think he would probably sign that.
I just don't believe they're going to give him the bill that actually, in good faith, does that.
I agree. They would slash it and not remove any of the loopholes.
Their agenda here is to make sure corporates don't pay any taxes.
Correct.
So, and corporations are already doing that. So, good luck, guys. Good work. You've done it.
Right.
But I just don't, you know, they have not proven themselves to be willing to do anything in good faith.
Right.
So I just don't.
Here's one thing that I do think that they can probably do that annoys me is I think that the Republicans will probably pass some of these free trade agreements that Obama is very keen on. And that's one of the things that Democrats don't like. And the reason that they haven't passed is because that Harry Reid hasn't been sort of too keen
moving
to vote on them. And that's because, you know, this is one of the things that sort of like makes Obama kind of, you know, the centrist and corporatist that he is. Some of the, his, you know, favorable thoughts on some of these terrible free trade agreements that most people think is, you know, at least in large part, you know, tanking our economy.
Yeah.
And have been since sort of, you know, the 80s and 90s when we started doing a lot of these. But anyway, so that I bet they can do.
Oh, totally.
It's terrible.
Right. It's terrible. And Obama still loves it.
So everybody can get behind it. Yeah.
Yes. If there's one thing that they can do, it's something that everyone in Washington unilaterally believes we should do and that no person in America thinks we should.
Right.
That seems possible.
Yeah.
But in any case, there were a lot of staggering inconsistencies between the way the interviews that Republicans gave in the aftermath of this election.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of curious to see where this goes. I mean, Jeff Flake was out there in the news talking about how he thinks they can get immigration passed, and I was like,
how?
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on, Jeff Flake.
Yeah. Also, Jeff Flake, you're in the Senate. You already passed it.
Exactly. Right. So
what do you have to worry about?
What's your plan now? Like. But you know, I think that they're, you know, there's going to be some wrangling amongst themselves.
Right. They're going to have to wrangle themselves.
It has started already.
That's been the problem for them for a long time.
Well, that's always been the problem.
They've had the majority in the House and they still can't pass anything there.
No, but they have some new wacko senators coming in. They're going to have this problem in both houses now.
Yeah, I agree.
And so it's going to be hilarious to watch.
Yeah.
Depressing to watch as well.
Yeah.
Juvenile.
Big time. Yeah.
If you're there, but a thing, nonetheless.
Well, and we, you know, speaking of immigration, one of, you know, we teased earlier in the podcast about, you know, some of the reasons why this may be a wacky lame duck session. Because one of the things is that Obama has said that if the Republicans didn't get to immigration before the end of the year, then he was going to do something unilaterally about it. And that would have to happen in the lame duck session. And it doesn't sound like that's going to happen. And he has basically now, just today, he was on Face the Nation, I think, openly declared that he is going to
do
whatever he can himself on immigration without the Republicans. And the Republicans aren't super happy about that.
No. I think that he has to, because he's in a lame duck after this year. So at he no longer answers to anyone.
Yeah.
He can go all totally rogue. Yeah. He can sign all the free trade agreements that he wants, but he's also able to do he can do any executive action he damn well pleases because he's not he's been in a lame duck session already, but this is as lame duck as it gets for him.
Right,
it is. So this is it.
Right.
Well, and I think this is another issue he'd like to make a legacy on.
You know,
he wanted desperately to have something happen on the DREAM Act, and it didn't happen.
Yeah.
He did whatever he could unilaterally, which was sort of only a little bit.
Yeah.
And I feel like for sort of larger immigration issues, he feels the same way. This is where the future of the Democratic Party lies. Like, this is a smart move for him to make, because they can campaign on this, and their base will soak it up.
I agree. Well, and the other thing is, too, is that, you know, he rightly blamed Boehner for this in the first place. Because, you know, now all of a sudden, they have the majority in both parties. Now they're going to deal with immigration. The Senate passed comprehensive immigration reform.
A bipartisan bill.
Bipartisan bill. And Boehner has been sitting on it for over a year because he doesn't have the majority of his caucus. There are enough votes in the House
to pass
the Senate bill that would get assigned by the president, and Boehner is just not not voting on it, and he's now out threatening. Oh well, if he said there will be no chance for immigration reform if the president pursues executive action.
Go fuck yourself.
You've already been not voting on it just because you're an asshole and you don't want to pass it.
Well,
so, like, all they're going to do is, now that they have both houses, is all they're going to do is pass, like, a freaking border fence and enough money to send down a bunch of people to just shoot Mexicans while they try to cross the border. So you can really, really, really go fuck yourself hard, John Boehner, because this is, I agree with you. Even if this means that nothing gets done for the next 2 years, they would deserve to have executive action taken on this, because they have been
and that only they lose there.
I totally agree.
Their future should lie with these socially conservative Hispanic voters that they can't they can't be respectful towards even slightly, so they can't get their fucking votes.
And if Obama can win them over,
and if they until can become the end of time, loyal Democrats, then all right, let's do it. Because they are going to vote on this issue over their social concerns. Yep. This issue is more important to them because they are sort of living in this state of, like, sort of pseudo border craziness.
Well, and I actually
heard it's too scary to be an immigrant in this country if we don't pass immigration reform.
I heard an interesting story about this, because in the 2012 presidential election, interestingly, Hispanic voters listed the economy as their economy and jobs as their number one, concern.
Right.
This year, it was immigration.
Not surprised.
And that's because
nothing's happened.
That's because Obama sort of, you know, probably on some level overpromised, knowing that he wasn't going to have a Congress in 2012, that he was going to do something about immigration. So not only does he have to, sort of just because it was promised and it wasn't done, but they are now more concerned about it. Because I think in 2012, the reason that it wasn't a huge campaign issue for them is because they assumed that if
he
got reelected, something would happen.
Yeah.
And it's been 2 years and nothing happened.
No.
So now they're pissed.
And I think that if the Democrats make it look like they wanted so badly for this to happen that they did everything they could unilaterally to make it happen, only the Republicans just, like, lose so hard on that. Because
so hard.
These voters are up for grabs.
Yeah.
They're up for grabs. It's so foolish to throw away a whole population that is growing, that exists in states that are red, that are about to go purple. It's just so foolish.
Yeah.
It's so foolish. I just can't even with them.
I agree. But if you can send them all back to their home country, then they're not voters anymore.
So true. Unfortunately for them, many of these states don't have a place to send them back to because they've been there already.
Right, exactly.
Enter Texas.
Yeah.
Like,
totally.
Nice try trying to throw everyone back to Mexico there. Half the Mexicans in Texas are from Texas.
Right. I know.
From before America was from Texas.
That's
true. Let's not get crazy.
Now, Joe Biden, not on the same page here.
No.
Apparently, which is annoying, but
Nah, it's annoying. I love Joe Biden.
It's annoying to Obama, too, apparently. Right. Because, so, you know, Biden has sort of been, like, a consistent kind of, like, deal maker. He's been called in a few times to sort of, like, you know, get everybody on the same side here. And so there was that meeting on Friday that they had with the president and, like, leadership of both parties, sort of, that happens after every election to sort of, like, you know, declare how everybody's going to work together. And then immediately upon leaving the meeting, forget that they ever had a meeting.
Right, everyone starts bad-mouthing each other.
But apparently, Obama was, you know, giving the Republicans the Riot Act about the fact that he was going to do something about immigration before the end of the year. And Biden interrupted him and asked the Republicans how long they needed to get it done, basically in an attempt to sort of avoid Obama having to do it. And Obama, apparently, this was an aide who was there sort of, you know, talked to somebody, you know, anonymously, like, basically. And they were like, the president shot Joe Biden a look that ended the conversation immediately. So, Biden trying to be a consensus builder.
Not right now.
Doesn't give a shit.
Obama's over consensus. Right. He should be. I would like to see him take more unilateral action just because I think that it would, I think that people would respond to it because this gridlock, when he does stuff that's big like that, it's always hugely popular because it makes it seem like someone is trying to do something.
Right.
And the Republicans don't look like they're trying to do anything.
No, they don't.
Currently. They look like they're trying to undo things. That's all they're trying to do.
That's what they
are. They are. But so I think that that is a positive thing. And Joe Biden's just an old-fashioned guy.
Yeah,
who shoots his mouth off sometimes. Right. Can't help himself.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we might lose everything in the courts anyway. Oh. The whole world might fall apart.
I know. This is bad news.
They're going to try to... They're going to... Hear another Obamacare case.
Right.
This one about the subsidies that were given to states that did not set up exchanges. To people in states that did not set up exchanges.
Who the federal government is running the exchanges of.
Exactly. It's the federal government's exchange subsidy program.
Right.
Which, so you know how, like, in California, we have our own exchange. Right. So we got subsidies from the federal government that are helping people who are lower income pay for their health care that they've been required to buy.
Keeps rates lower.
It doesn't keep the rates lower. It keeps the cost lower.
Right.
So
right.
It means that the insurance companies are willing to participate because they still make too much money.
Right.
The government is paying that money instead of people.
Right.
So people are still paying the money because those are our tax dollars. Right. But ultimately, people's everyday lives are not being upended by the need to find $500 a month to pay for their health insurance.
Right.
Now, in states that didn't set up exchanges, obviously the federal government has been providing those subsidies on their own exchange.
Right.
Some sneakmonger decided to look through that bill and decided that the language just didn't support the federal exchange giving out these funds.
Right. Subsidizing states who are not running the exchanges themselves.
So they are bringing it to the courts, and the results might dismantle Obamacare, at least in every single state that it needs to be mantled in.
Well said.
So these are the subsidies that make it affordable to provide. And also, it, by the way, I think would invalidate the penalties as well. So it would basically eliminate Obamacare in half the states in America.
And I think people are worried about this is because this law has been through the appeals court already, and it was unanimously shot down in the last appeals court. And a lot of times when that happens, the Supreme Court will sort of like... feel like the appeals court has just done its job at that point. Like, if the appeals court was, like, unanimous in their findings that, like, this was
a sham bill,
then you sort of, like, then don't decide that you want to hear it as well, because it's sort of like, well, who really cares?
That's what they have the lower courts for, so they don't have to hear bullshit.
Right. So, everybody is sort of,
so this is a political move that they're making.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's overt.
Yeah.
So that's a problem, because once they're making an overt political move, they're not doing it because they love Obamacare and want to keep it as it is.
Exactly. That's why people are scared.
If they did that, they could just not hear the case.
Yeah.
I still maintain, and I'm definitely wrong a lot of the time, so don't take my word for it, that they, and I think the same thing about the case that we're about to talk to, because we're about to talk about how they're going to take another gay marriage case.
Yeah.
They have stayed very close to the line here, but they have not ever crossed a line that couldn't be uncrossed.
Right.
I think that's a line that can't be uncrossed.
Well, and that is due in large part, whether you sort of like where he stands politically, to, as you mentioned, it's John Roberts sort of like doesn't want, he has seemed to not want to be the guy to sort of really like go out on the limb. It's his court.
It's his legacy,
right,
too, because he is the deciding vote in that court.
Do you want to be the guy who made sure that like 7 million people like got dropped from their health insurance?
Because there's like an immediate effect to that ruling, and it's a terrible effect.
Yeah.
So they have stayed very clear of setting that kind of a precedent where they could be openly declared an activist court.
Right.
Because they haven't wanted to cause that kind of chaos.
Right.
And I think that Roberts is very aware.
Yeah, he's a guarded, I mean, sort of like in
and,
that
and so I think he's an asshole.
Sure.
And I think personally he might believe terrible things.
Right.
And I don't care. I mean, I care, but I don't care. But I mean, I think that there have been a lot of sneaky ways that they've ruled in negative ways in the last few years. And that's, you know, this is a court that brought us Citizens United. That they're not ashamed of of their bad decisions, exactly.
Sure.
But I do think that in place, in things that will cause a political uproar, they have been very careful to not step over the line.
Yeah.
Just because they don't, there's no going back from that.
Right.
Once you've done that, you sort of are on the precipice of a world-changing moment, or at least a country change, a nation-changing moment. Because I think that people, honestly, are able to not pay attention, you know, until something like that happens.
Right, I agree.
But it's very difficult to justify what we're, you know, how we are going to allow 25 million people to lose their health insurance in a day.
Right, exactly. I agree. So the other thing that they're probably going to hear, and this is because... There was one asshole court. Right, there was a circuit split on gay marriage, basically. We now have a circuit split because one of the federal appeals courts finally upheld same-sex marriage bans in four states who had brought the case in Kentucky, Michigan, Tennessee, and Ohio. So what happens, all of the other circuit appeals courts had thrown out those laws and declared them unconstitutional. So now that we have somebody who has upheld them, that's when it usually sort of like almost immediately sends something to the Supreme Court because they have to they have to then sort of like make the decision because now you have all these sort of like disparate laws.
Right.
So, of course, everyone is sort of panicked about this.
This now, would be such
and
a dumb move.
And a lot of people were sort of like, well, wait, they already heard gay marriage. But they didn't really hear gay marriage in the sense because the California case was really sort of more about like, could we... The California case was about we had already had gay marriage and then we voted sort of like retroactively to like take a law away from someone. And that is sort of, that is how that got, like they just felt like they didn't have standing to rule on that basically. And DOMA also was just sort of like ruled, that's a separate,
it's a ridiculous
law. That's a separate animal. Like that's not actually like a gay marriage law really. It's not in terms of
But it was
like,
another one that was sort of set up in a roundabout way to restrict gay marriage.
So
it wasn't a ban on gay marriage.
This is a little different because this is sort of like whether gay marriage is protected by the Fourth Amendment, you know, equal protection clause.
Yeah.
So this would be really the one that could tear the whole thing down if, but it's like you said,
foolish to rule that way, especially in light of how they've ruled.
I don't think they want to be the court that does
this. To set us back that way in a country where public opinion has changed so dramatically, so quickly, that this, and more so, this is such an easy issue to understand, more so than Obamacare restrictions and more so than, you know, anything that has to do with campaign finance reform or any of the other things that they've voted on.
Yeah.
Gay marriage is pretty simple to get. So to for them to kind of like go back on a promise they've sort of already made would be so silly.
I agree. Of course, everybody's panicked.
Well,
you know,
gays are dramatic. To use a stereotype that's apt for this. I'm seeing a lot of talk about this on my Facebook wall as well, as are you.
Yep.
People are over-dramatizing the situation slightly, I would argue, just based on the precedent that this court has set. And it's annoying that it keeps needing to be retried.
It's like, can't we have just... Can we just decide that we already did this once?
Right. Like, can't they just be like, you know what? One court that ruled differently? Who the fuck are you? Get over
and
yourself.
And if they can't get gay married in Kentucky, then fucking leave.
Yeah. Exactly.
You don't want to be there anyway.
But it's, like, to do this would, it would set up a whole new wave of these laws in states where people don't want them anymore. We're over this.
Yeah.
Everyone has realized that no gay wedding has ever once personally impacted them.
Right.
Unless they've known the... the brides or grooms in question, and they've been forced to buy a wedding gift for yet another group of people, which is an annoying situation to be in. I get it, you know, but like, it's not the end of the world.
No, it's not.
Anyway. So, the Supreme, it's going to be a Supreme Court year to watch in the worst possible way.
Also this week, we got a new attorney general nominee, which is another thing that Republicans had said that they wanted to deal with in the next Congress, which is why that we're going.
It's why we're dealing with it right now.
Which is one of the other reasons why we said that this lame duck session was going to be interesting, because he wants a vote on it. You know, now he's put his nominee out. It's Loretta Lynch. She's 55. She's currently a U.S. attorney from the Eastern District of New York, and she seems qualified. She's already been confirmed by the Senate twice because she has to be confirmed for her current job as a U.S. attorney. So, you know, she's someone who, if you decided not to confirm her, you would have to sort of go back on, you know, having confirmed her twice already before. So it seems like, you know, supposedly everybody is saying that she was the safest bet. On a related note, hilariously, Breitbart, really, they did this article. They were really pissed off about her nomination because Loretta Lynch, and this is a quote, they said, was part of Bill Clinton's Whitewater probe defense team in 1992. The connection to Whitewater ought to provide additional fodder for Republicans during Lynch's confirmation hearings. Wrong. Loretta Lynch. That Loretta Lynch, which I'm finding harder to say every time I say it, was a very white woman who was a defense attorney from California, and not the African-American woman who is the U.S. attorney from the Eastern District of New York who's going to be the attorney general. So, idiots.
In other news, we're deploying troops to Iraq.
Right. Not to fight.
Not to fight, just to... be there to hang out?
Yeah.
Are they going to pass out ice cream? Like, what is their plan?
This sort of goes back to, I heard somebody talking about this, and I don't remember who it was, but when we initially sent over, you know, those 300 sort of, like, troops who were just basically, like, there to sort of, like, advise. Remember when we sent over those advisors, like, early or whatever? Like, somebody was like, you know, Obama keeps talking about how we're not sending boots on the ground, but, like, what do we think that these people are? Like, are they maybe not going to the... They're potentially not going to the front lines, but if they're there and they're working with the Iraqi army to train them to go fight these people, like, are they not troops on the ground? Like, do we not just now have 3,000 troops on the ground?
Yes.
Yes, we
That's
do.
That's what we do.
Right?
That's what
so
we have.
So you can get into whatever semantics you want to, but we now have 3,000 troops in Iraq who are fighting ISIS.
That's the number of troops that we have on the ground right now.
Right. We're back at war.
We're back at
war. And you can think that that's not what's happening, but that's what's happening.
Michelle Bachmann's also leaving.
Yeah.
And we...
She's running for president.
She's running for president. Yeah, she's busy. Well, it didn't stop her before. Right. I mean, she's been running for president for years.
Yeah.
Hasn't stopped yet. We don't need to tell you that much about her because we talk about her all the time. And I don't think this will be the last that we hear of her.
No.
So,
thank God, too.
Thank God for that.
Yeah.
So we have some exciting people coming in, too.
Yeah.
And by exciting, I mean terrible.
Yep.
We have a Virginia representative, Barbara Comstock, who is a lobbyist for the Koch brothers, for Blackwater, for Geo Group, which is a prison company.
She's real into that mandatory ultrasound law that was going on in Virginia not long ago.
And then she also was one of the investigators into Bill Clinton's 90s, you know, era shenanigan investigations during his impeachment. So that was also awesome. We have Glenn Grothman from Wisconsin, who Think Progress said, Grothman's views are as prolific as they are extreme, which is my favorite thing that they've ever said about anyone.
Yeah.
He believes a lot of things, and almost all of them are crazy. One is that women should be paid less because money is more important for men.
Oh, sure.
You know how that is.
Yeah.
He doesn't think that MLK Day should be a holiday, unsurprisingly. He's also pretty angry about Kwanzaa, because he thinks that, quote, almost no black people today care about Kwanzaa, just white left-wingers who try to shove this down black people's throats in an effort to divide Americans.
Divisive holiday of Kwanzaa.
That's right. he doesn't believe that teachers should be allowed to mention homosexuality in the classroom.
God.
Not to say that it's okay, just mention that
the
it
horror.
Exists. Right. Also doesn't believe people should be guaranteed a weekend.
Well.
The unions want us a weekend, but he doesn't believe in unions.
I bet he believes he should be guaranteed a weekend.
I bet he believes a lot of things. I bet he also believes he should be guaranteed health care for being one of the people who's going to be in Congress, and yet I would disagree with him only because he disagrees with me.
Yeah.
He also is a big voter ID law advocate.
Yeah.
But he has sort of openly said that it would help Republicans.
Right.
So he's not afraid to say what he thinks.
Yeah.
And then in West Virginia, we have Alex Mooney, who... West Virginia is the third of three states he's attempted to run for office in.
Three states. I mean, come on.
He was a state senator in Maryland.
Sure.
And then he decided, hey, I'll run for the House in New Hampshire.
Uh-huh.
Because why not?
Yeah.
Did that. Didn't get elected. So he's moved on to West Virginia.
No elected anyway.
Where he is mostly just famous for being, like, super anti-gay.
Yep.
And, you know, then also tried to sort of, like, argue that, like, gays are, like, trying to take away free speech because you can't speak out against gays. But, like,
that's not
hate speech is not free speech, guys. Like, no. That's not a thing.
It's not.
We have Ken Buck from Colorado, who was part of that 2010, like, mega disappointing year where Republicans thought that everything was good.
Crazy people and couldn't get elected.
Couldn't have been more in their favor, right. But they were running, like, Christine O'Donnell and Sharon Angle.
Right,
and
that was the last midterm where the Republicans had big ideas to claim the Senate.
Exactly.
They couldn't that up. Because they ran a bunch of wackos.
Exactly.
Including Ken Buck.
So the GOP basically found him a House seat in a very conservative district as a present for his honorable service, I guess. I don't know.
He thinks that being gay is a choice, just like being an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
He also said in 2010 that voters should support him because, unlike his female opponent, I don't wear high heels. Oh. So, basically, for being a man,
right.
Which is wonderful. Yeah. And then also, he thinks that we should privatize veteran health care, which is funny because he comes from Colorado, which is about as military a state as a person could come from. We have Jody Heiss from Georgia, who is not exactly a big believer in gender equality, despite his name being Jody. In 2004, he was asked about the growing number of women in Congress and said, quote, "If the woman's within the authority of her husband, I don't see a problem."
Yikes.
He also thinks that Muslims shouldn't be protected by the First Amendment because Islam is, quote, not a religion, but a, quote, totalitarian way of life with a religious component.
I don't think the First Amendment has anything to do with your religion.
Nope.
Actually.
Never has. Hmm. Never has.
Interesting. He's confused, I think.
He's also someone who thinks that being gay is a choice. Mm. He would like to get rid of Obamacare.
Well, sure.
But most importantly, he believes that the cause of the Civil War is still an open debate.
Oh, I see.
The war of Northern Aggression, I'm sure.
That's right. Yeah.
Still alive and well in his home.
Yeah.
And then finally, we have Tom Emmer, who's taking Michelle Bachmann's seat.
Mm-hmm.
He is just a guy who really hates the minimum wage.
Right, exactly. He ran for governor.
That didn't work out.
No.
But he was against the minimum wage, and then I think he thought to himself, like, people aren't going to like me just saying this, so I'll think of something that's sort of in the middle.
Right.
So then he decided that he was mostly just in favor of slashing wages for waiters.
Oh, I see.
Like,
interesting.
Somehow the service sector was different than other wages, which is true in a lot of states. Like, waiters make like $3 an hour because tips get included as part of, and that's not legal in every state. I don't think it's legal here. But I think he thought maybe that would be a thing that people would be more comfortable with. I don't know.
He's also a big proponent of bullying.
Yes, exactly.
Because he promised a veto of an anti-bullying law.
Well, and in a state where there have been a ton of suicides because bullying related.
Yeah.
Against gays, who he probably doesn't think should exist anyway.
Well, that's why he was going to be
exactly. Those, they should be thinning themselves out, I guess, in his opinion. He'd also like to get rid of Obamacare, unsurprisingly. Well, sure. So that is.
I think that's the
unifying
right, exactly.
factor here.
Yeah.
But in any case, those are the wonderful people that we have to look forward to coming up in this term.
Exciting.
So
hopefully they'll be as crazy as promised.
Yeah. Sorry, every piece of news that we brought you this time was horribly depressing.
Yeah, well.
But
it happens.
Those are the breaks.
That's it.
Also, sorry that this
you
is an hour
this.
And a half.
You can fix this.
But we had a lot of cheerleading to do this time.
Yeah.
Because it's all fixable. Yeah. Nothing can't be undone.
That's right. We got 2 years.
We have not a lot of options for people that could run for president, but some.
Some.
I think, you know, more so than ever, I think that Liz Warren is really our great white hope because she's the only person that I can really see, you know, I was talking this whole time about how important it is that we have someone who can exist online as a candidate, and she is the only person that I can see doing that.
Yeah. You know who else I think knows that she's the only great white hope? Is her.
Yes. I think that's why she's opened the door again.
Learning it.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, that was my new dog.
Brandon's new dog, Hulk.
Very
Who I've been accidentally calling Thor all day.
She's on the wrong superhero.
But he's so cute, and he loves me the most of anyone, so I should learn his name.
Had an outburst.
That's right. Well, he's new.
So, bless his heart.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, in any case, that's the news this week.
Yeah.
We will be back next week.
Yes, hopefully something less depressing.
Yeah.
It can't be this depressing.
Well, it's going to be my birthday episode, so we're going to...
Yeah, that's exciting.
We're going to have to be more optimistic,
because
we're going to be focusing on the year ahead.
Exactly.
So, in any case, do good. Get your friends up on their politics now. Read our blog. Start now. Don't wait until it's election time. It's too late at that point.
Yeah.
Start now. And we will talk to you soon.
Bye.